It spells clean.
Keith Murphy.
It's a big, hairy American winning machine.
And he fails.
I got a guy on the other line about some white walls. I'll talk to you later.
It's the Murph and Andy Show.
Shoots a three and got it.
Powered by AD.
British young Cinderella.
On 1460.
KXNO.
And now 106.3 FM.
Welcome to the Murph and Andy Show on a Wednesday. Mr. Movie in hour two, but it's hour one. Keith Murphy, along with Andrew Downs, powering us up. Andy momentarily. And we say hello to Andrew. You look a little tired today. Didn't get enough sleep?
Didn't get enough sleep, no. Okay. I could have gone to bed earlier last night. I knew pretty much in the first inning when the Dodgers scored in the first inning that it just wasn't going to be the Giants' night. Their starting pitcher didn't get out of the second inning. But I'm a passionate fan. This is an important series. This is an historic series, and I forced myself to sit up and watch that entire game.
What time did that end?
11:30.
Okay, not too bad.
Not terrible, but you got to understand, Murph, I'm a guy who does not stay up till midnight anymore. I used to be.
What changed in your life?
Kids. Yeah, kids who wake up early.
No, my knew daughter, the answer.
The thunderstorming this morning woke my daughter up at 5:30, and it was my turn to get up with the kids this morning. So, yeah, I'm running on low sleep, but I get a reprieve from baseball tonight. I've watched baseball like 8 nights in a row. Not going to watch any tonight. There's none on, and then buckling up for a big one on Thursday.
Well, that's the fun of fandom right there.
It is.
You enjoy, get after it and have a good time with it. This is why you're a fan, and don't worry that the networks are rooting for the Dodgers. Don't let that impact your enjoyment at all. I'm sure it's all on the up and up.
Just about everybody's rooting for the Dodgers. It feels like Murphy.
Not Mr. Movie.
That's okay. No, he's not. I'm not. There's several Giants fans in the area who are not.
In fact, Mr. Movie sent me an email yesterday just to praise your audio drops recently. Your play of the day. He thinks you've improved that segment.
Oh, well, that's good to know.
I'm sure there's no bias there from Mr. Movie.
No, not at all.
Let's get to the one at one here on a Wednesday.
The one at one.
One.
With Murph and Andy, powered by Kaburski Brothers Lawn Care.
All right, the Braves, we'll stick with baseball for a moment, are going back to the NLCS after Freddie Freeman delivered a clutch home run to send the Brewers packing.
Fly ball, deep center, going back, Kane, at the wall, that is good!
Freddie Freeman's left the yard and put the Braves on top in the bottom of the eighth. With a solo shot to left center, they lead it 5-4 in game 4 of the NLDS.
First pitch, and he sends a shockwave through the ballpark, and they're going crazy here in Atlanta. He is a dangerous, dangerous man.
That was like a double announcer call. Go! Both at the same time, like they join each other. You don't always hear that.
That was fun. That was a good game. And I should amend what I said. I have a feeling the Braves fans are rooting for the Giants tomorrow night as well. I don't think anybody wants to see the Dodgers.
There are a surprising amount of Braves fans around here, too, like Chris Williams being one. And it probably, if you're a certain age, you don't understand. If you're young enough, you probably don't understand why. But for people over, I don't know, 30, 35, a lot of kids pick their baseball team based on either TBS or WGN.
Yeah, it's who you can see. Braves games were on all the time. Plus, in the 90s, the Braves won all the division titles. They were a very good team. They were a fun team. There's a lot of guys my age, Chris Williams being one of them, who adopted the Braves. And, you know, here in Iowa, you don't have a pro team, so you can kind of pick whoever you want. A lot of people pick the Braves.
It's probably underestimated just how many Cubs fans and Braves fans are across a couple of generations. It was just because of those WGN broadcasts and those TBS broadcasts. And there were a lot of non-traditional, non-hardcore sports fans that start to get into that. Like I remember in my early days over at 13, you really would hear from some people that, especially older people, that they that just became like their nightly habit to sit and watch those teams, either Cubs or Braves.
And you would think Major League Baseball, with all of their blackout rules, could look just not too far back in the history and see, hey, look, if the games are on TV and accessible to people, you get fans. People buy into baseball and create a lifelong love for a sport and a team that carries on for years and generations. And now they make it very hard to watch their games, and you can see it start to flounder a little bit.
They do, and not without reason. It does show you sometimes that the immediate dollar in front of you is worth more than the long game to them, to yes. owners, to, in some senses, you know, even players. Instead of growing the game or growing the fandom or being really concerned about how few young people watch baseball games start to finish anymore, you just know that the way to force these rights fees in days when live sports are worth more than they've ever been, even if ratings erode some, that is the way you can make somebody watch, get them off their phones, get them off their streaming devices, or in some cases they're watching their phones, but they're watching their team, live sporting events, more value than ever, and those rights fees are worth more than ever, and that's immediate riches for those franchises, so they just can't do the right thing. It's like some people feel like, I just don't understand it. I mean, why wouldn't they want fans watching? Well, they do want fans watching, but they know that they force those rights fees to go up with the exclusivity.
Yes.
And it's maddening because it's bad for the game.
And they know.
But they don't care. They care more about the money than they care about how bad that is for baseball.
Yeah, because they know there's enough passionate fans for each team that some people will buy the subscriptions and pay the money for MLB at bat or, you know, whatever it is. I know I've done that before to follow my team out of market. But you're right. It's short-sighted. Is what it is.
It is short-sighted. It is dollar bill-sighted. Dodgers force game five with the Giants, as AD well knows. Thursday's game will be only the fifth winner-take-all postseason game between 200-win teams in baseball history.
Wow. Wow.
How about that?
That's really cool.
And the first between two teams in the same division.
That's pretty incredible.
It's a historic.
It is.
Game five
this,
coming up.
This series, which is the first between these two teams and the two best records in baseball, all of that, it has lived up to the expectation, at least going into game five and having that decisive game.
In the American League, it's the Red Sox and Astros. The Astros, kind of the cheating villains of with the backdrop of cheating. They're hopefully not cheating anymore, but the most unlikely team to ever turn villain. You never would have guessed yes. that the Astros, with those almost rainbow striped jerseys and Houston,
yeah,
a city you don't think
about right? They switch leagues
with some likable players. You
for
just
sure.
wouldn't have thought the Astros could become the villains of baseball, but they have. And now they're getting so successful every year that helps with the villain role that they're in. They are in their fifth straight ALCS. There's not a lot of teams that have done that.
No, that's incredible. That's a
impressive.
Really hard thing to do. It is. Just making the playoffs 5 years in a row is impressive.
A little more NFL fallout here, and it's fascinating because the NFL managed to kind of hide the results of that long Washington football team investigation in October. The NFL, this month, for the first time, we got some results. We got something out of it. But so far, it's just been two ESPN personalities or broadcasters that have been hit hard by these emails, 165,000 of them. Or no, I think it's 650,000
emails. Yeah, I think
that's 650,000
yeah.
emails. So 650,000 emails. So far, John Gruden is out of a job and being taken out of the Tampa Bay Bucks Ring of Honor.
Wow.
So it's taken him down, and he was an ESPN broadcaster at the time. And now kind of some embarrassing professional emails for Adam Schefter, who is the guy who breaks the most transactions in the NFL.
Yes, right.
I mean, he's kind of the Woj of the NFL, but it tends to be transaction-based. This player's been signed. I don't think any of us are surprised that Adam Schefter, in his role, has tight relationships with executives, and forming sources often means friendships and trust and knowing that you're not going to reveal your sources, all of that. He clearly has that with executives, with owners. But according to the Los Angeles Times, his Schefter's relationship with then-Washington executive Bruce Allen included submitting an entire story for Allen's approval. And in the email that's getting the most attention, Schefter writes, "Please let me know if you see anything that should be added, changed, or tweaked. Thanks, Mr. Editor, for that and the trust. Plan to file this to ESPN about 6 a.m. I don't think this is shocking, but it's embarrassing yes. for Schefter. I mean, and not all of you probably don't know the inner workings of media, and I'm not a writer by trade, but I think all writers and even people that do what I do, there are times that you're quoting somebody and you'll put that quote in front of them or you'll fact check. Now, we did this interview. Here's what I heard and wrote down. I want to make sure this is what there are parts of stories that you might run by a source just for accuracy's sake and to make sure that source is not going to feel like, now, hang on, that's not what I meant or that's not what I said. But to take an entire story and send it, and basically you're saying, want to make sure this is the way you would write it.
Yes, exactly.
So that there's not an attempt at fairness here or balance. And this was a story about a collective bargaining agreement negotiation. So it's a big, big story. ESPN has answered, "We believe that nothing is more important to Adam and ESPN than providing fans the most accurate, fair, and complete story." So this is a reminder we probably don't need, that when you are in business with somebody, you are going to lose some of that professional objectivity. I don't think this is shocking. I don't. This story will go away pretty quickly. Schefter's not going to be punished by ESPN for this. Some have called for him to be fired. He's not going to be fired.
No.
I think it's just a reminder that, like, the reason ESPN pushes the NBA so hard and so constantly is they broadcast the NBA constantly. They pretty much ignored the NHL for many years, and now they're back with a bunch of NHL stories and highlights. It's just business.
Yes.
They now have the NHL back.
Yeah, they've tried to tear apart the Big 12 and, you know, recreate the SEC, or, you know, prop up the SEC, at least according to Bob Bowlsby in the Big 12. ESPN is working in its business interest. Adam Schefter,
yeah,
for his job, yeah, for that role, he has to have these relationships. Now, the ethics of it, I think there's a gray area there, and I'm not a journalist by trade or anything like that. I didn't go to college for it. I don't hold myself to those standards, and so I don't know where that line is. It feels like a lot of, you know, capital J journalists are upset about this.
It absolutely is unethical, and it's like it's a tenet of journalism. And for those who are writers, I'm sure there are many who are offended by this. Just like for those of us who watch Ted Lasso, when a source was revealed out in the final episode without giving too much away, they kind of made it good and showed that he knew he was basically ending his career. So it wasn't that the writers were as unaware as some people thought, that you can't burn a source, because you can't burn a source. Your career's basically over at that point. And in this case, Schefter didn't burn a source, but in an email he never expected to see public light and, right, under normal circumstances wouldn't. But it also continues to be interesting what is allowed to be leaked and what's not. Out of 650,000 emails, the two that have been leaked, one is about Adam Schefter, and one is about John Gruden when he worked at ESPN.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see if we ever get more of these emails.
There's some selective choices being made here. And I think the big takeaway for me is just, this is a reminder. Not all people at ESPN don't want to paint everybody with the same brush, but it is, the original letter stood for the Entertainment and Sports Programming Network. And entertainment is the first part of what ESPN is doing. Like when you want to get an inside scoop of what's going on, if it's a negative story, you're probably not going to look to somebody who is engaged in business with Iowa State or Iowa. Like Learfield might not be the first place you would turn to get a scoop on a negative story about Iowa or Iowa State or any college that's in business, because they're in business together.
Yes.
And almost any place that's doing business with someone, including KXNO Radio, and we work at WHO 13, you want You want to believe that you will 100% do what you should do, but there are always parties in most places where human beings live and breathe that want consideration given to, do we have to do this story? And you push for it, and it should go forward. It should make no difference if somebody does a bunch of advertising on your station or it, you know, those should be two separate things. Your journalism and your news department should never be impacted in any way by a sales consideration or a client or how this makes, you know, the general manager's best friend look or something like that. But the reality of it is human emotions get it anywhere.
Yes.
And you hope that most of the time the good ends up winning. The right thing triumphs. But it doesn't always.
No, it really doesn't.
It doesn't always. We'll take a break here and come back with What's Bugging Andy and Kirk Ferentz backing up Hawkeye fans.
Deep experience.
Fairway Online Shopping. That's right. Add or coming soon to your local Fairway. You can now shop online for curbside pickup at your local Fairway. Visit shop.fairway.com to send us your order today. We can't wait.
I'm back on the Murph and Andy Show. Kind of a chilly day out here. Andy comes off the noon set and right into the studio here. I don't know where you've been. Maybe you don't look like you're dressed for television. But anyway, well, what's bugging you today, Andy?
Yeah, I was over at the noon news. Changed into my workout clothes here. I got fading voice syndrome today.
Your voice is fading?
Yeah.
Or you mean just, as a voice of the people or just your actual
instrument? My actual voice. I'm having a hard time making it sound right today.
I'll talk more. That's not a problem. Don't even worry about it. We'll move on. Murph and Andy Show here Wednesday. Purdue is next on Unbeaten Iowa's schedule, but it has been hard to move on from Penn State. For many reasons. Here on Wednesday, this seems like still looking back instead of looking ahead as much as any game I can remember in a while.
Absolutely.
It's really been like that. And Kirk Ferentz strongly defended Hawkeye fans who have been criticized nationally, especially by Penn State fans.
Football's a hard, competitive, tough game, and, you know, fans are into it just like everybody else is into it. And first of all, I know a couple players were legitimately hurt. I know that. I saw one sitting on the bench, just happened for whatever reason, like there was an opening. I saw him, and I know he had a ice bag on his leg. Obviously, the quarterback didn't come back, so I hope those guys are well. I don't know what their status is. Nobody wants to see anybody get hurt. Nobody. But I think probably it's a reaction to there were a couple guys that were down for the count, and then were back a player or two later. And yeah, I mean, our fans aren't stupid. I mean, they're watching. They know what's going on. And I've been here 23 years. I think that's only the second time we've seen that kind of stuff going on. I know it's a topic nationally right now. It was one of the discussions of the rules maker. They don't know, quite know, nobody knows the answer to it. But it's, and I also know for a fact that people, there are two people in our building that have been places where that was, scuba or dive. No, scuba and turtle were the code words for, so, you know, it goes on. We don't coach it. Haven't really been exposed to it, and you know, but our fans thought they smelled a rat, I guess. I don't know. So, you know, they responded the way they responded.
All right, this is strong from Kirk Ferentz. I want to give you a couple thoughts I have here first. First of all, I don't know for sure whether Penn State at times was faking injuries in order to stop momentum from Iowa, even though it did happen after 10 to 12 yard plays. It did happen after big Iowa plays. I suspect that is what's going on. I don't know for sure, but I do know this. Kirk Ferentz, in what you heard right there, he is certain that that's what was happening. They were there in the moment. They were looking from a good position on the sidelines. They've since looked at the film. And he references two people in the building who were either with Michigan State in 2011 when it happened against Iowa or worked with James Franklin at Vanderbilt. So it's clear that Ferentz has intel here. It is no coincidence. I mean, this is pretty brazen to say the word. The words are scuba and turtle. He is saying that they have been told past code words for staying down to stop momentum. That is strong. I also believe that none of this happened. He's defending the fans, no doubt about that. But I also think he's sending a message to the Big Ten and to Penn State that we know what you are doing, and it needs to be watched closer and it needs to be stopped. Now, it's not actually technically against the rules, but it's kind of – most coaches don't do it. Most coaches don't think it's ethical. And James Franklin suggested that Penn – he's, without even being asked about it, suggested that Penn State does not do this either. So this is strong from Ferentz. I mean, this is – Andy, this is him – saying, we know what you were doing, and the fans are right. They weren't booing the injured players. They're booing the methods.
Well, I think we've commented a number of times this year alone about how we're kind of enjoying this new Kirk Ferentz, who, you know, doesn't always hold his tongue, and he's kind of getting into that old man behind the wheel syndrome where the guy's like, I'm old, I'm backing out. I don't care who's behind me. Here I come. I'm tired of waiting on everybody else. I'm just going to say what's on my mind. And it's been refreshing because this shouldn't be controversial. The only thing controversial about this is that somebody finally said something about it. And let's not pretend for a minute. Like, none of us started this life 10 minutes ago. We've seen this before. That's why we think that these guys were faking these injuries. And people weren't getting it. Nobody in the stands was listening to Joel Klatt. They weren't taking a cue from him.
No.
From him. They've seen this stuff before. It happens all the time. It does happen all the time. And it doesn't just happen in football. It happens across all sports. I mean, think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Diving, faking injuries, faking charges, diving in hockey, grabbing a guy's stick and throwing yourself to the ice, get a hooking penalty. All the flopping you see in basketball. Don't even get me started on soccer.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Baseball, pretending like you got hit by a pitch or leaning into a pitch when you're expressly not supposed to do that. To a certain extent, it's gamesmanship. You're fudging the rules. You're fudging the spirit of the game. And sometimes it's smart. It's kind of smart. You're slowing down the pace of the game a little bit. And they do tell you, and you take refuge in stuff like, well, you know, they're taking injuries more seriously than ever with the game of football right now. So if there's any chance that you are injured and maybe you need a little bit of a breather, then don't take chances. Just sit down there, slow down the game, let our trainer get out there and make sure that, you know, nothing's wrong with you. You know nothing's wrong with you, but it's okay. I mean, because you're just saying that, hey, I'm erring on the side of caution.
This is a physical team we're playing. We've already had some injuries. If you have any doubt, sit there a minute and make sure.
Yeah, the only thing that's standing out here is that somebody said something about it.
Yes.
You know, not the fans, because the fans, again, they do boo this stuff. We've heard it plenty of times before, but somebody, the ilk of Kirk Ferentz, has said something about it.
And this is like so many things.
And he said it after he won a game, which I think adds a lot of credibility to it.
I think that's a great point. And it's a point that has not been brought up enough. This is not sour grapes. I mean, this is...
No.
Like,
nope.
Everything is seen through the lens of fandom. Like, Iowa fans are quick to point out that, Penn State fans almost... To a man, to a woman, have pointed out, if Clifford stays in that game, we win easily. That's how Penn State fans feel. Right. Iowa fans almost always answer about the adjustments that Iowa makes, that Clifford had thrown a couple of picks, this and that. And, by the way, that's part of football. You have to have your backup quarterback ready, ass test.
That's a better point.
Yeah, all of that. But we all heard how many Iowa fans had trouble getting over Ricky Stanzi getting hurt. And how many times was that brought up in defense of that loss?
That was a legitimate point.
Yeah, it's a legitimate point, but people see it through the lens of fandom. Penn State fans think that among things they point out is, why would you need to slow down Iowa's slow offense? I mean, they are seeing it completely through their eyes. Iowa fans are seeing it through theirs. The few local people I've engaged with that have defended Penn State or questioned whether Iowa was tanking, turns out they're Cyclone fans. I mean, it's it's not hard to see how you see this. And it goes to the media to some degree. Corey Geiger writes for the Pittsburgh Sports Daily, writes, I honestly can say I have lost just about all respect for Kirk Ferentz. I mean, he shreds Ferentz over this press conference. And here's Joe Klatt and Gus Johnson from the Fox broadcast Saturday for more perspective.
What we see is Goodson find a lane on the outside and get some positive yards. And it's so fascinating. You're hearing the boos. You know why you're hearing the boos?
Why?
Every time Iowa gains more than 10 yards or 12 yards, there's somebody that goes down on the Penn State defense. There's been an injury after every big play that Iowa has had. And the fans here recognize that. And they are upset by it.
Do you think that's by design?
It doesn't look like it. I mean, Arnold Ibukati is not the guy that you would say, hey, we need you to fake a cramp. Why? He's got to be on the field, right? So, and we've seen Brisker go down at one point. P.J. Mustipher, 97, he's gone down. These, to me, are not tactical. Ibukati is not the guy you would have sit down. I think that this has just been by chance, but it has been something that has gone on today.
And it looks like he's okay.
And because of that, Iowa has not been able to establish their rhythm. Because you know what rhythm, you know what you get to when you hit a couple of big runs? Play action pass.
Ooh.
That's what Brian Ferentz loves to do. And they haven't been able to do that because they basically had a timeout after every single big run from Tyler Goodson.
Well, that's good objective broadcasting from Joel Klatt, because he's pointing out that some of these players are not the tactical ones. It doesn't seem tactical to him. But at the same time, he is pointing out the coincidence that we all saw, that after every big play, there's a player down for a bit.
Well, and when you have a program, the quality of Penn State's, or at least what it should be, you wouldn't think that any of those players out there would be expendable on the field and that they would all hurt to lose for a play, because they're on the field for a reason. But, you know, if there's just sort of if they're only out for a play, it's not going to hurt them that much. It might be worth the sacrifice to just slow it down. I do think it's a tactical thing. I think, and I don't think it's stupid. I think it's, you know, flows against the spirit of the game. But, you know, look, I mean, it's a small price to pay. I mean, they were able to slow down the game and keep Iowa's offense off rhythm, or maybe feel like they did. And all they had to pay in return was listen to some boos.
Tom, what do you think about this?
You're not going to like this, Carl. You went to journalism school, I assume. What evidence is there? You just went on 2 minute narrative here about Penn State. You just confirmed whatever Ferentz says. There's no evidence at all that Penn State had a strategy for this. I just listened to the Joel Klatt thing, and what we're doing now is we're taking anecdotally from the color announcer. We'll see. He agrees with it, so it must be true. Brisker had shoulder problems.
Let me interrupt you real quick there. I think we played Joel Klatt because he didn't completely agree with the narrative he was hearing from the fans. He objectively presented both sides of it. He said it didn't seem tactical to him, but he also pointed out the coincidence of players getting hurt after big plays. I think we played him because he did not reach a conclusion.
Okay, I mean, there's people on the other side of it too. National pundits saying, "Where does Kirk Ferentz get off on doing this?" I like to ask Andy. He just said they come back after a play. Well, who was that, Andy? I don't recall anyone like that. Who was that?
I don't know. Look, first of all, I'm going on anecdotal evidence because this is sports talk radio, and that's what we're talking about.
Yeah,
we're not gonna have proof.
Right, we're saying have a feeling that that's what was going on. Right, we didn't do it. This is not an in-depth journalistic piece.
Yeah, this is sports.
This is our feeling of what happened.
I'm just saying.
I could not take this to a court of law.
No, but I'm saying both of you have just said that Penn State had a strategy to fake injuries. I've heard this the last 20 minutes. I can't pronounce the
Tom, name. I didn't Joe say that.
The name. He was out for four plays, and so he returned. It wasn't one play. It was four plays. Obviously, Clifford was out for good.
Tom,
if
you care about facts, and you say you do, but then you say some things that are not, like, that is not what I said. Are you asking my opinion? If I think that Penn State was trying to slow Iowa's momentum after big plays, I do think that. Can I prove it? No, but that is what I thought watching the game. And I'm not one of these fans in the stands that was booing or something. I'm just telling you what I think. It's sports talk radio. I'm not going to confuse sports with something that's really important.
Okay. I appreciate that, Keith. I enjoy the show all the time, but Joe Klatt mentioned Mustipher. Mustipher never returned. He's a valuable player. He never came back.
And Kirk Ferentz
was on your show and said, hey, Joel.
Kirk Ferentz brought that up, too. He said he thought there were legitimate injuries.
And I've said repeatedly that there were players, there were five Penn State players that were legitimately hurt. I mean, Iowa, that was a really physical game. I mean, Riley Moss got hurt. There were players that were hurt. That was a bring-the-wood football game. There were knocked-up, dinged-up players.
And I appreciate the time. I understand it's an antagonistic point of view. If I had been the presser yesterday, I would say, hey, Coach Ferentz, which player do you believe was not injured? And he probably couldn't have answered me.
First of all, you can bring a contrarian point of view. I'm not offended. I just want to be quoted properly, and I want what we're doing to be represented properly. But we're going to have opinions, and sometimes it's on opinions that would. There's a difference between what I think and what I know and what I can prove. We're telling you what we think sometimes, but we try to discriminate between the difference. This is an opinion, and we have a quickie poll, and it's brought to you by WCI Pools and Spots.
Yeah, what's your opinion? Try to put whatever your fandom is aside. Do you think that Penn State at times faked injuries to slow Iowa's momentum after positive plays? Yes or no?
I do.
I absolutely do. Yes.
I do.
And I don't know. I didn't realize we needed to point this out, but this is not an investigative piece where we have broken down every single play. We are going off a gut feeling here.
Yep.
Maybe we should have pointed that out right at the beginning for people like Tom.
Maybe.
We are going off a gut feeling on watching that game and having watched football for decades, watched sports in general.
I
feel like we did give some examples.
I think that Kirk Ferentz knows something. I think he has intel from people who have worked with James Franklin. I think he came really close to, he went right up to the line of just actually saying that. I think they feel like this was shady, but it is also not against the rules. You can do this. It is gamesmanship. Some people, I think that's why Ferentz pointed out, we don't do this. But he has no doubt, and LeVar Woods certainly had no doubt. He actually did a demonstration of a flop on the sidelines that Mark Freund caught on camera. Ryan, to your point.
You just kind of made my point for me, and I think Tom's missing that. Ferentz, when he said that code word, I guarantee you that's from the guy at Vanderbilt that was on the staff with Franklin.
Scuba Turtle.
Told his, that's not an accident that he says that, and that was in response to Franklin a couple of days before, I think, complaining about it. So we'll see if Franklin says anything else after this, but I'm assuming Ferentz, that was 100% planned. He knows for a fact somebody on his staff that he trusts coached with Franklin, and that Franklin, just like D'Antonio, people from his previous staff had admitted, yes, we coached guys to do that. And somebody's been with Franklin, he's done it before, and that was more than coincidence. I was at the game, and it was pretty easy to see, because you could watch the guys on the sideline literally get up, not walk over there. You couldn't see what they were saying, but they would literally get up, walk, jump around, and two plays later, not any of the guys on offense or the quarterback who nobody knew there was even hurt. But, yeah, you could, when you're in the stands, you watch the guy walk off, watch what he does, and then two plays later, it's pretty obvious.
Ryan, we appreciate you calling. Call us back anytime. Dave, you were behind the Penn State bench?
Yeah, I sit 10 rows behind the visitor's bench, and I saw the quarterback come off. And I looked at him. He took his helmet off, and I went, he's not coming back out. He was in pain. Number 17 is the biggest faker. He's a transfer from Temple. He's a defensive end. We got a first down on a 9-yard run, and all of a sudden he said his knee hurts or something hurts. And he lays there for at least 3-4 minutes, comes over the sideline. Two plays later, he's back in the game. And he played the rest of the game. They were definitely faking things.
Yeah,
I have to say.
Thank you, Dave. And there are times, cramps being one, there are times where there are brief injuries or dings that you quickly recover from. There was a time I thought Petras might have to exit. He got hit on the thigh so hard, but he stayed in there and made a big throw. Man, he was hit hard. Jeff, we're taking some of your calls here. You clearly, a nerve has been hit here. Go ahead, Jeff. Jeff, go ahead.
Guys, you there?
Yep, you're here.
Awesome. Well, here's the deal. I don't, like you guys touched base on, I don't know if they're faking or not. You don't know if they're faking or not, but here's my point, is that years ago, people would bash Ferentz about how vanilla he is, and he's kind of like Belichick, and he doesn't really say anything in the post-conference, the pre-conference. You know, now we got him kind of tearing up, crying in pretty much every interview, and now he's seeing what he feels like, you know, in these interviews. And people are bashing him for no reason. This is who we want. We want a coach that's going to speak his mind, tell it how it is, give us a little insight in the game, and that's what he's doing. So, you know, I hope he doesn't get this and be like, well, I guess I'm just going to go back to the sideline, chew on my gum, and not say anything. I think he's done nothing wrong.
Thanks,
I don't think you find a lot of people around here that think that he has. It's the Penn State side of the argument, and you can understand that they're biased.
Gosh, I work with a hardcore Cyclone fan that love what Ferentz had to say.
I do, too. Yeah, we've been complimenting that the whole time. We like hearing what he thinks, and honestly, knowing Kirk Ferentz as we do, I don't think that he would have said that if he didn't firmly believe he was right.
Yeah, because
he doesn't pop off at the mouth. We know that.
It's not actually cheating per se, because it's, again, within the rules. There's not a rule against this, but it's just one of those unwritten rules.
And
that
I don't think that necessarily the players even have to be coached to do that necessarily. They've been playing the game of football. You know how to slow down something. You know when you're doing something that the coaches like without them saying, hey, go do this.
You also know whether your coach would be okay with that,
yes.
I think, too. Mike, you have a point on James Franklin?
Yeah, he's the coach of this team. So let's just lay out the facts of what we know about James Franklin. Whether these were fake or not, they all involved defensive players who were out for a short amount of time and came back in the game. Do you guys remember about 3 years ago when the big controversy about James Franklin early in the season was they were playing a non-conference game, winning like 45-0 against like a Buffalo State or something, and Buffalo State was lining up for a field goal in the final minute of the game, and James Franklin reinserted his first team defense, called a timeout to get him back on the field, and his reasoning was, our third-string defense has never practiced against a field goal attempt. So this is the same guy at the same school that for years we know we're doing unethical things. So I'm not saying it was deliberate, but just lay the facts out, and that's how people judge people and what they do. So thanks for taking my call.
You got it, Mike. That sounds like just trying to preserve the shutout. I don't think, but that's what that sounds like. Derek and New Sharon. Derek, what do you make of all this?
Well, congratulations, guys. You guys, this is why you guys are a Marconi nominated team right here. You found the only Penn State fan in Central Iowa in Tom. I even found myself rooting for the Hawkeyes Saturday.
You did?
Ugh. Yeah, I root for the Hawkeyes Saturday because of my boy Ross Patterson. But we don't need to go into that. But whatever. And I do like the new Kirk. How about that?
Thanks, Derek. That is a real testament there that Derek found himself rooting for the Hawkeyes. Justin, Penn State injuries. What's your thought?
Oh, man, Derek, you just totally shot me out of the water. I mean, I was going to say, hey, Iowa State fans, stop calling with acrimony about Iowa. We know that it's killing you that we're awesome and that we're number two and that we beat you and you were supposed to be better than us. And then Derek calls and says, Iowa State man loves Iowa. And why is the only Penn State fan in Iowa calling you? And I would like to know that, too. Tell that guy to go back to Penn State.
I don't know that he's necessarily a Penn State fan. Yeah, thanks, Justin. We should point that out. He may not. He just wants probably some healthy debate about this. I think maybe he sees another side of it.
And, I think he does. I think he believes
that's fine.
I think he believes that we're drawing conclusions that can't be proven. David, you'll get the final word here on this. Go ahead, David. Yeah, go ahead, David.
Hey, well, a number of years ago, I was at the bowl game when we played LSU, and they were feigning injuries, and they weren't even making, you know, slight of it because they'd go to the sidelines and do jumping jacks and laugh. And, you know, certainly, I've had tickets there for 45 years. Booing somebody that's hurt isn't appropriate, but at the same time, This is a ploy, and you know those guys came right back in, and they didn't act like worse for wear, even though they lay there forever. I just think if the NCAA is studying this, if they wanted a real rule, they should have to stay out the whole series before they come back in. You know, I understand. I don't like booing, period. But this idea of getting free timeouts I think it's ludicrous.
David, thank you for your thoughts. Yeah, and there is some nuance here, and I realize it sounds a lot like when Hawkeye fans would say, "Well, we're not booing the quarterback; we're booing the decision to keep him in the game when we should be playing the backup." I don't think Hawkeye fans were booing the injured player. I just think they're booing the technique. Yeah, and I know those two things sound a little similar. The Cellular Advantage presents the Murph and Andy Show, and when we come back...
It's time for Throwdown on the Murph and Andy Show.
Let's throw it down, Andy. We just heard some of it on the show. Iowa fans and Penn State fans have been going after each other on Twitter all week. Now the media and even the coaches are getting in on it. Is a level of real hate good for a sports rivalry?
Now, by real hate, you mean not real hate, right?
Yeah, you're right. I mean,
talking about violence and discrimination.
But I mean, like some real dislike,
some real sports hate.
Yes. A journalist saying, "I have lost all respect for Kirk Ferentz," in the headline.
Where we start acting like we feel stronger than we actually do, right. Or that this is actually a bigger deal than sports. Right. Yes, absolutely. That's what fuels us. That's why we have sports talk radio and sports media, and why people pay a ridiculous amount of money to go to sporting events and get sports packages. You can do pay-per-view on TV. I mean, that's what fuels it, right? I mean, that's the wood that's in the boiler right there, the coal. You know, it goes over the line. There are people that can't handle the hate. That says more about them, I think. But yeah, I mean, it's what we long for in a rivalry like Iowa-Nebraska that just has not quite launched yet. It'll eventually go overboard, and we'll want to reel it back in. But right now, we're jonesing for it because we know all that comes after that.
The only thing missing here is geography, because this is great for a rivalry. I mean, you don't want it to get out of hand where it does turn into some real concerning things. But right now, this is great. I mean, you wish Penn State, if it's Iowa Penn State in the Big Ten championship game, that's more interesting.
Yeah, bring it on. Murph, John Cusack was accosted outside of a White Sox playoff game because he's been a well-known Cubs fan when the Cubs are good. He says he grew up watching both teams, and he's a fan of both. Is it against fan code for someone to be a fan of two rival teams?
Younger me would say absolutely. Now, older with perspective, I'm like, if John Cusack, a proud Chicagoan, if he wants to go to both games and be a fan of both teams, he's still mostly a Cubs fan. But absolutely, let the guy enjoy himself. And when did it become okay, just because everybody has a camera, to walk up and do an interview in somebody's face when they're out trying to enjoy a game? I don't care if he's celebrity or the information director for the Des Moines Police Department or whatever it is. This is not right. When do we lose our manners? You don't do this. Let the guy enjoy his game. You want to write that he shouldn't be a fan? That's fine. Should come up and just jump into his face and put a camera right there. He did. God.
I totally agree with that. That's the strongest takeaway I had from that entire thing, the barstool guy just walking up like that. Look, I'm not from a city that has two teams like that, so I'm not exactly sure how that works, but I am exactly sure that the Cubs' main rival is the Cardinals, not the White Sox. I don't feel like that city's divided evenly either among those fans, so I do feel like you can just be a fan of the overall city, and the Cubs can be easily your first favorite team, but the White Sox, your second, being in the American League and all. I don't see how that's not possible there. I absolutely feel like he should be able to do that in that situation. If it's Cubs, Cardinals, Red Sox, Yankees, something else like that, different cities, no, I don't think you can.
Plus, same it's John, okay. John Cusack. This guy, go up to him and say thank you for those great 90s movies.
Yes, and your sister
and 80s
awesome.
Movies.
The poll is up on Twitter, @Murph_Andy. Who won Throwdowns? Was it Murph or was it Andy?
Maybe this, 2000s movies,
this
too.
New thing, just shoving a camera up in somebody's face. Come on. Hour 2, coming up.